So along the lines of the last couple of weeks, we've had several successful former athletes who have transitioned from a very successful athletic career to the world of academics, such as Alan Sack, Damon Williams. We're bringing in Eric T. Mays, a.k.a. Dr. Eric T. Mays, a.k.a. we just gonna call him Doc today. As an athlete, Dr. Mays has an incredible story of a one-time walk-on athlete, student-athlete who became a co-captain of the University of Michigan 1997 National Championship football team. Since finishing his football career, Eric has obtained his Ph.D. in educational psychology from Howard University and also has recently added an additional graduate degree from Harvard this past year in educational policy and management. In addition to becoming a sought-after public speaker that has led him to speaking engagements at the White House, as well as being featured by ESPN, Sports Illustrated, and the LA Times. More information concerning his story and his availability as a speaker for your organization can be found on his website of Dr. Eric Mays, with an E, M-A-Y-E-S.com, DrEricMays.com. On a personal note, Eric and I share the same hometown of Kalamazoo, Michigan, so I'm especially proud of his accomplishments and excited to have him join the Real Sports Guy tonight. Eric T. Mays, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, fellas? Phil, thank you for that introduction.
Glad to have you.
Doc, I want you to jump in. We're discussing the Jeremy Lin situation. Like I said before you came on, I'm going to get your perspective, and then I'm going to take the gloves off and ask some tough questions around this situation. What's your perspective on the Jeremy Lin hype, his performance, and the correlation between the two?
Now, I haven't seen Jeremy Lin play, so I won't speak on his performance. But I'll speak on the phenomenon, and I've sort of seen and observed the phenomenon. And it's so complex when you think about it. Because the NBA, what are we talking, 15, 20 guys per team, a couple dozen teams, a small number, hundreds of high school basketball players, hundreds of college basketball players, hundreds of thousands of high school basketball players. And so the opportunity to play in the NBA is such a limited opportunity for a lot of folks. And so then you have Jeremy Lin, who's the non-traditional, small college, Harvard Ivy League college grad, Asian American, right? So he's an outlier from the traditional NBA player, you know, anyway. So that in of itself creates this awe, this, you know, almost this cult following. It gives people who never thought that they would have an opportunity to play in the NBA or to reach those heights in the NBA to do so, right? And so that's one piece of it, right? So those folks that root for the underdog, that dream the impossible dream, you got those folks. And so you've got those legitimate folks who believe in the possibility, and so that possibility to take them out of the mundane sort of existence, the day-to-day drudgery of work, job, school, whatever that is, to be able to dream, to think that the dream that they have inside of them, there's a possibility that they can actualize that. So that's that piece. And so that's the authentic human spirit, one component. Another component are those folks who actually enjoy seeing somebody, a non-African-American man in the NBA, excelling on a high level, right? Because there's a bit of envy, I'm sure, by some folks with the large number of men, particularly large number of black men that dominate the NBA, right, in terms of statistical numbers, right? Y'all folks probably know the percent of black men in the NBA. I mean, if you flip that with the percent of black men in the U.S. population, right, if blacks make up 12% of the U.S. population, and black men may make up 6% of that, and for them to make up, I don't know, 80, 90%, 70, you know, 70 is a low number, so I'm between 80 to 90 of the NBA. I mean, so you've got that piece, too. So then there's those folks who may be rooting for Lin because of that, because that envy and jealousy, and they want to see something different. So I think it's a multitude of things why people are following him and why people are excited about it and why it's a phenomenon. But I would also say, I would just oppose that to Cam Newton, right? And I would say Cam Newton is a awesome story. I think he breaks the monotony of for those folks who want to see diversity at quarterback in the NFL, right? They've seen the traditional white quarterback in the NFL, and they want to see something different. But his story hasn't been able to garner sort of the same cult following, right? And I think those were the issues that we have to deal with, the uncomfortable conversations about race that folks normally don't want to get into. But I would ask the same question, just as I asked, why Lynn, why not Newton?
Doc, you have an incredible story in terms of being a walk-on, which is amazing to me because I saw you play in high school. I mean, you were a heck of a ball player. Can you talk a little bit about the ride, the road that you took from your last high school football game to the point where you ended up being a captain on the team in Michigan athletically?
Fellas and Phil specifically, I decided not to play football in college, believe it or not. I had scholarship offers. I was recruited. But I took a visit to a school down in Tennessee out of high school. I was recruited by the local universities, Kalamazoo area, state of Michigan. And I decided that, I'll backtrack a little bit. I was asked to come speak. If y'all remember, during 93. It was when the riots broke out in L.A. from the Rodney King verdict. Right. And so the church in Kalamazoo, might have been Galilee, I'm not sure the name of it, but they asked the student athletes to come down and speak. And so I shared my piece, I spoke my piece about my analysis of the situation and why the folks were rioting in L.A. There was a woman in the audience, and she decided to sponsor me to go on a trip. And so I took a trip. A black college tour. I'd never been to a black college campus. I went and I visited several of them, and I fell in love with it. Specifically, I fell in love with Xavier New Orleans. Gave up my college scholarships, went to Xavier New Orleans, didn't want to play sports anymore, wanted to go to college, major pre-med psychology, chose academics. And that was based on my visit to Tennessee State, which was one of my football visits. I took a visit there. I'd never been on a plane before. And being on an HBCU campus changed my life. It changed my perspective, how I saw the world, and it's where I wanted to be. So I went on that black college tour. I took my transcript with me. I got admitted to Xavier New Orleans on the spot. And as far as I knew, that was the end of my football career. I enrolled in Xavier. I was down there about 6 months before I got homesick and was ready to come home. I had good grades, 3.1, right? 3.1 was good, first-generation college student. My grandmother went to the third grade. My mom and my pops grew up on farms, picking cotton as sharecroppers. Both high school graduates but hadn't graduated from college. So for me, you know, just going to college and having access to college, you know, getting a 3.1, getting into college was a big deal, considering that my brother, my older brother, my older sister, and my other two, one sister who was adopted and another cousin who lived with us, I happened to be the first high school graduate of those group of folks. I fell in love with Xavier. I was homesick. I had never been to a state that hadn't touched Michigan. So everywhere I'd been to, I drove. Right? Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois. That was it. Maybe Ohio, I think, when I was 2 or 3 years old. And so I transferred with my grades. There were two schools that I applied to. I applied to Michigan State and the University of Michigan. And the love for Michigan was motivated by one of the books I saw on your website, which was the Fab Five. I sat and I read the book and I looked through the book. And I pictured it and I imagined myself at the University of Michigan. I was admitted to the University of Michigan. I got tickets like everybody else. I sat in the stands and we played Colorado. They came to Michigan and Cordell Stewart threw a Hail Mary.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that hurt.
in the corner of the end zone, and I sat there in that stadium with all of the rest of, in the student section, and I said to myself, and anybody that was on that team that's listening, and I forgive, please forgive me, but I said to myself, man, they sorry. I need to be on that team. I can play here. And I went out for the team the next semester, walked onto the team. So that was sort of the start.
What I love about, and I said some things too when that ball was thrown as well. What I love, the part of the story that I love, because this is part as well we want to talk to you about, is the premium you put also in education and how that's been a guiding point for you. Can you talk a little bit about, even as a student athlete, how you balance that as a priority in that environment in terms of that continue to have that value for the education, the student side of the athlete?
Pre-high school, I was the typical young man, smart. Back then, being smart was cool, right? That was before gangster rap. It was before crack cocaine hit our neighborhoods. It was before being a thug was one of the, or a rapper was one of the best things you could, you know, be coming out of our communities, right? It was back when being smart and, you know, maybe wearing some eyes shirts was in, right?
I remember that very well. Yeah. You put creases in your pants.
I was born to that, so I knew, like, remember we listened to music that, like, made you feel good? Talk about Whitney Houston or Lionel Richie or Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So, you know, music you could sit and listen to with your mom and dad. So music that could tell you that, you know, you were somebody and that made a difference. You could make a difference in the world. You know, we are the world, right? So I love school. I always loved school. I was smart, and being smart was okay. It was when we got into seventh grade and eighth grade when kind of that transition changed. But for me, athletics allowed me to continue to be smart and the place to continue to be smart and it not be challenged, it not be a problem, right? And so it wasn't questioned about me being smart. Was I eligible was often the question. Yes, I'm eligible, so hey, no problem. But in the ninth grade, I have to give a lot of credit to my basketball coach at the time because I wasn't aware of what it would take to get to college, Peter Jarrett. Because, you know, my ninth grade first hour class was gym. And, of course, if you know Michigan, who wants to go shower, get dressed, go to school, and then go to gym when you have to take swimming in the middle of winter, right? So I took my schedule, of course, to my basketball coach for him to fix it. And he looked at my schedule, and I was signed up for, like, shop, you know, I don't know, home ec, I might be exaggerating, automobiles. But whatever I was signed up for, they were not college prep courses, right? And so that experience, him changing my schedule and put me in college prep courses, even though I may not have wanted to be, it gave me the foundation to create the options. But there was also something fundamentally different that happened to me because by the time I got to ninth grade, I no longer was as motivated for academics, as motivated to excel, to be a scholar, right? To excel at being a scholar. But I read the autobiography of Malcolm X. It was given to me in ninth grade, and it forever changed my mind about education, right? And the importance of education, the way Malcolm studied the dictionary, the way he read books when he was locked up, and he decided to make time serve him instead of serving time. So that was a key piece for me, that those two things. One, the decision by my head coach, basketball coach, the reading of the autobiography of Malcolm X. But the precursor to all of that was my mom and my dad as a young guy, right? My mom bought the encyclopedias. My mom and dad bought the encyclopedias. And so we would have, that's from before internet, when you actually had books and shelves. We had a library in the basement. And those encyclopedias, and I fell in love with the F encyclopedia because it was the one, I think it might have been the Britannica set. It was the one set that had color pictures. The map section also had color pictures where you could feel the maps and the mountains on the page.
That's right.
But the F section had the flags and all of the flags of the world. And I fell in love with those books, and I fell in love with reading. And to this day, I still love books, and I still love reading. So a combination of things, my home structure, and I'll give you one more sort of example. When I was in the sixth grade, we had yearbooks. Last day of school, Northeastern Elementary for Phil, Kalamazoo.
Absolutely.
So in the sixth grade, we had those autograph books, and I didn't have the money to get an autograph book. So my mom made me an autograph book out of cardboard, out of like construction paper and yarn, and she put my picture in the front. And I just thought it was the dumbest thing, and they were going to laugh at me and talk junk. But when I opened it, you know, I opened it, and I saw my mom, she had signed it. And in there she said, Eric, I've seen you through 6 years of school, and I look forward to seeing you through 11 more years. And I thought to myself, like, man, my mom don't understand. I'm only going to be in school 6 more years, 12th grade. I graduate, right? Mm. But my mom was already sowing the seeds, even though none of her other children before me had graduated from college, let alone were going to graduate from high school at that point before I did. But she was sowing those seeds in me. So to some point I had that sort of that foundation that education was important. I was helped, assisted along the way. I was open. My mind was opened up to the importance of an education through reading Malcolm. And then, to be honest with you, I decided that I wanted it. I made the decision that I wanted to be smart. I enjoyed school. I was smart. And that was the commitment that I was making to myself.
One of the things I want to follow up a little bit with that is that, and this might carry a little story, I mean, one of the things that we've been talking a lot about with this discussion about college athletes and this greater emphasis that I know has been talking around the NCAA and other areas about the level of engagement in other academic part of the institution in terms of academic life of the institution. You know, if you're on a Blue Ribbon committee, or if you're on a committee trying to make recommendations about how to create greater engagement for college athletes in the academic life of the institution, what recommendations would you make?
Make it a priority. College athletes, probably more than any other students at the university, follow the rules and regulations. They are coachable. The large majority of them, if you think about the fact that they have, and we're talking largely often, we're talking mostly scholarship athletes. So you think of all the hundreds of thousands of high school students. This small group of students were selected because they took the courses, the college prep, they received the SAT or ACT score, and then they excelled at an extremely high level in their sport. So to be honest, these young people represent and discipline group of young folks. So I think really just a university or a group of universities, college association, right, NCAA, just has to make it a priority. That's it. It just has to be a priority. These young folks will do what they're required to do because they love their folk. They love their sports. They love competing. And obviously they've excelled academically. And many of them, to be honest, many of them love school and learning, right? Because those playbooks, specifically in football, for those folks that don't know, the days of just showing up without reading and studying that playbook are gone. If you're going to play isn't the reason why you should necessarily choose a university. You want to go to somewhere where you fit, where it fits you, right? Where you can walk away from this university later and say, yeah, that's where I went to school 15, 20 years later. Right, where you can see yourself with these young men, these coaches who are going to help you grow to be a man, right? They're going to help you and give you the tools you need to succeed in life. Those are some of the reasons you want to choose a university.
Stuff you're hitting is right in my wheelhouse. So you got me. We could talk about this all night, and I love this because I think part of what it is how do we help build capacity? And I know you've been writing a lot about leadership and capacity building. And what can you do in terms of positioning yourself for success? Can you talk a little bit about some things that as folks are thinking about you know, what are some of the things that you need to do to think about leadership, capacity, mentorship, all those things. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you're really hitting on how do we build our capacity to be successful and get to where we want.
I would say this, and this applies to me where I am in my life, and I think it can apply to the fellas, you all that are sitting there running the show, and the folks that are listening, that we should look for people who are doing the things that we aspire, right? I'm a big reader of biographies, right? I love to read the narrative, right? The path, the journey. It helps give me context, right? To understand that this person just didn't show up and become great in 3 or 4 days, right? And so context is important, studying narratives, but finding those people that exist that are closest to you, and they may not. Let's say if the process that you're involved in is a 10-step process, you may not be able to touch number 10, the person who's at 10 every day and have access to them. But if you're at 1 or if you're at 2, you may be able to touch the person that's at 3 and 4. So that's the person that you may want to reach out to study, to talk to find, to develop a relationship, right? So that this person can help you build capacity, right? So this person can help you grow and develop in the ways that you aspire to grow and develop, right? So I think that's one thing, just simply identifying people who are on the path that you want to be on, who have made some of the accomplishments that you see for yourself and that you want to achieve. And so that's one. And so I think it's important for parents, specifically, and not just for student-athletes, but for student-athletes to find examples, whether they're coaches who both prepare their students for academic, athletic, and life success, not for all three of those. And then just, you know, to say, okay, this is a particular program, this is a particular person, and this person I know will help prepare me, right, or my team or my child to make it to the next level. So I think that's one thing. We just have to find those people. We have to access those people. And believe it or not, if what you aspire to be isn't something terrible, right, normally the people that you reach out to will be approachable and be willing to help, right, and will extend themselves in return.
You know, the points you hit on education and being an athlete are amazing, and we appreciate you sharing your story with the listeners out there. These are the kind of stories that we want to bring to you through this platform, through this format, Renegade Radio, Real Sports Guys, RSG. This is what we want to bring to you, stories of real people out there who are real folks doing great things, invested in helping and giving back to others through their knowledge, through their actions, all those good things. I want to thank Doc Mays for doing that. Doc Mays is going to stay on with us for a little bit and get into as we move on through the show. So now, you know, we like to make lists and have debates and have those barbershop conversations. So now we're going to go into our top 20 hip-hop songs of all time. Now, PhD is going to lead us off, but before we go into that, I want Doc Mays, he's got his top three. So I want him to drop it on us real quick.
Okay, now check. Now, it's much easier for me to give you my top three, top 10, top 2 universities than it is for me to give you my top 3 greatest rap songs of all time, right? I'm going to throw a couple out there because I can't claim, you know, that I just got a list of some of these that's just, and these are the top sort of songs that have touched me right over my life, in no particular order, but I'm throwing them out there. We got Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight, MC Light, Light as a Rock. I'm going to throw 5 MC in the bag, Treat Them Like They Want to Be Treated. Heavy D, We Got Our Own Thing, right? Ducky and Stick, you know what I'm saying? The Show, LL, I'm Bad, I Need Love. I'm going to throw Hammer in the mix, Let's Get It Started. Right? You know, when he came at LN, DJ Run, EPMD, You Got to Chill. I can't, you know, I got to. TMP in there. Biggie, Sky is the Limit, and then Notorious Thugs. You know, it just is what it is. Houdini, One Love, Friends, Ice Cube, Stay True to the Game. Public Enemy, Fight the Power. Big Daddy Kane, Smooth Operator, Ain't No Half-Stepping. Above the Law, Black Superman. Ghetto Boy, Straight Gangsterism, My Mind Playing Tricks on Me, Dead Prayers, Mind Sex. CeeLo Green, I'ma Die Trying, Outcast in Due Time, Common, Asada, DMX Slipping, Nas, One Mike, JJ Fad, Jay-Z, Hard Knock Life, Renegade, Slick Rick, Hey Young World, and it's a tie. If I gotta choose a tie at the top, it's between Tupac, Keep Your Head Up, and Self Destruction.
Whoa. Well, where's the flex bomb? We gotta drop a bomb on him.
And that's it.
Right, that's it. Excellent. Greatly appreciate you visiting, Doc. You know, we really appreciate you coming on. I know you gotta get going. We'll give you a round of applause.
Hey, fellas, I want to thank y'all, one, for opening up the waves and having this critical discussion around sports, culture, education, current events. It's necessary. Good to see y'all brothers on here sharing your voices, sharing your thoughts. Keep doing your thing, and I appreciate y'all for having me.
Glad to have you. And for our listeners that want to learn more about Eric and possibly have him as a speaker for your organization, again, Doc Mays can be reached at his website at Dr. Eric Mays, that's M-A-Y-E-S, DrEricMays.com. So feel free to contact Doc. And again, thank you so much for visiting, and I'll shoot it back to the Game Changers.